Hi, this is Circe Olson Westner. I'm the director of the Museum of the American Military Family in Tejeros, New Mexico, and this is our podcast, At Ease. I'm speaking with Army brat and author Nancy Laird Young today. She's written a lovely book called Tea with Dad, and we're going to talk to her about it. Welcome, Nancy.
Hi, Circe. How are you?
I am well, and I just wanted to tell you that we are doing this, I know you know, but our audience doesn't know that we're doing this by Zoom, so we may have a dog bark or the mail person ring the doorbell. That's happened before, but welcome to the show. I'm really excited to talk to you today.
It's good to be here.
So I have to say that I read this book when it was still a draft and it was on my phone in a little PDF. So I didn't get the experience of turning the pages and letting it really sink in. But I have to tell you, even in the little iPhone size, it really resonated with me. As you know, my parents are both in their 90s, and this was a very poignant story. And so I wanted to congratulate you on completing the book. It's no longer draft. It's actually published.
That's right.
Yeah. So how long did it take you to write this book? And when was it published?
It was published. We're almost to its year anniversary. June 1st, 2021 was the launch date in the middle of COVID. And so it's kind of been, I don't know if you've spoken to other authors who have published during these past 2 years, it's been quite a ride. The traditional publishing process and then the post-publishing process has really forced authors to be very innovative in how they get their book out. So it took me about 2 years from start to finish. But that being said, I had been collecting little notes, conversations with my dad, more journaling them and kind of in research mode with no intention of writing the book, really. Sometimes I'd post little snippets on Facebook. Sometimes I'd share them, you know, the things we talked about with my children. But it really was, I thought I would be writing a little book that was a conversations with dad or funny little things my dad says. And what happened was, as I wrote it, it became a memoir about who he was, who my mom had been, a history of how they met. And a real sense of what life had been like for him. Because we realized during a ride one day that he and I had only lived together while I was growing up about 50% of the time. Even though he might be stationed in the same place we were living, it was during the Cold War. We were overseas a lot of the times, and he would be away on maneuvers. You know, out 6 weeks and back a month, out 6 weeks and back a month. And of course, he went to Vietnam at a critical time, I think, in a young woman's life. I was 15 when he left. And just, I think they had allowed me to start to date at that point. And as I said in the book, it must have been very hard for him coming back after being away on hardship tours to see his children 2 years older or a year older.
Right.
And at different stages of their lives. And so as it was in those days, I think that moms were pretty much in charge of raising girls and dads were in charge of raising the guys. And so they're really, our relationship required, I think, in many cases, my mother to be the interlocutor, you know, the translator between the two of us. And so we really didn't get to know each other till I moved in.
Well, you know, I think this book covers, like what you're just saying, topics that many of our readers can relate to. And then, you know, besides the complicated relationships and the constant coming and going, I remember when I was on one of my, I'm an Army wife. And at one point my husband and I had been married 11 years, but he'd been gone seven of them, you know, through TDY and deployments and all that. So I think this book covers a lot of topics that our really readers can relate to, but also watching our parents age and then ultimately, you know, taking care of them.
Yeah. And I think that was the thing that I didn't realize till I was through with the book, because the book starts out with me having to move in with my dad, even though I'd always planned to take care of him. It starts with me having to move in for my own personal reasons, which was basically I was pretty broken. And he recognized it. And I'm sure he wasn't crazy about having me return home, but that was what you do, you know. So I came home. And I realized if we hadn't had that time to really get to know one another, the idea of my suddenly dropping in to take care of him when he became in need of that would have been much harder. And so one of the things readers tell me is that the book pointed out that there's ground to cover before you take a parent in or you move into their house to take care of them. Because it's not a parent-child relationship anymore. It flip-flops. There are unresolved issues, different stories we've told about one another, different things we understand about one another that maybe need clarity before you become a day-to-day part of your parents' life again. Especially if you're in the caretaking or caregiving side of things.
Right. Well, you know, you mentioned it. You had a lot of painful stuff going on in your life when this, you know, when you start, you pick up the story. Did you find writing about it cathartic?
I found, yes, you know, it was certainly cathartic, but before it was cathartic, it was illuminating. Because I think, first of all, you just soldier on. When my experience, at least in my family and in talking to other brats, we grow up with this sense that things happen. You brave on. You get through it.
Brave on. Yeah.
And you move on, and it's kind of facilitated by the fact that often we move a lot. So you can leave things behind and just start anew. I mean, when I was always ambivalent about moving, heavy on the I don't want to move side, but still there was this little bit that would go, yeah, but I can start over.
Yeah.
But what that can create, not for everybody, but for me, it created a lot of what I call unpacked boxes, you know, that weren't full of things I needed to get rid of or sort through, but emotions and experiences I probably should have understood better.
Right.
And so it was illuminating to me to be confronted with my part in all of this. And, you know, as you know, from reading the book, I'd been through 2 divorces. My children had grown up. My mother had died. There's a lot of loss any human being goes through. I'd been through a lot of it at once, or in a very short period of time. And it finally, I think, just was too much for me. And he saw that. But it was very illuminating and provide a lot more insight than I'd taken the time to apply, I think. And it was a healing experience.
So you wrote all about this in the book, and you were writing deeply personal stuff. Did you ever stop and think that complete strangers were going to read it, or that your life might be the subject of many dinner table conversations in your neighborhood? There goes Nancy. She wrote that book about.
There are a couple of things about that. I was less worried about strangers and far more worried about family. I'm a pretty self-disclosing person anyway. if you know me, you know a lot about me, because, and I think this was developed too, as someone who moved a lot, you have to get in quick.
Right.
You might be leaving soon. Yeah. So I am both someone who's who shares, but at the same time keeps some things very close to my vest. So I knew there would be people that would be shocked or surprised by me being so open about the painful things. Because I don't think I was that very often. But I was far more worried about my family, and also worried that I wasn't remembering things the way they might. I was lucky. I've always been lucky to have a community of writers around me. And those people really said, if you're going to do it, you got to do it.
Right, right.
And I made a pact with myself that I would not do anything gratuitous, but I would tell whatever the story I was telling or the episode I was writing about required. And the one person I discussed things with very carefully was my father.
Well, and that was my question. Did you talk it over with your father when you first thought about writing the book? So what was his response? I mean, obviously you wrote the book, so he must have encouraged.
I explained to him that I was writing this. It was developing into a more serious story, a memoir, that there would be things in this book that he didn't know about me. I said to him, I will not publish anything without you knowing it's going to be in there first. I didn't say I wouldn't put things in. I just said, you will know first. And I said to him, I have to do this way, or it won't be an honest book. It won't be a good book. And he kind of looked at me. And he said, well, I guess I can write my own damn book if I don't like yours. So I said, okay. And then at one point, after the book was published, and he actually, even though he'd heard these things and he knew what I was putting in it, when he actually saw the book and he kind of read through some of it, he looked at me and said, well, I don't remember it that way. And
well,
I said, it's okay.
Well, that was another question I was going to ask you. So if your recollection of an event differed from your dad's, who won in that conversation?
I wrote it the way I remembered it. And I have to say, for the most part, I was pretty accurate when I talked to people about what was going on. I mean, my sister-in-law was a great validator. She said, when we talked about my mother's service, she said to me, you captured that perfectly. And that I was afraid I had not, because it was such an emotional thing. But they were more, I think the things that didn't set with him as being what he recollected were those parts of the book where I talked about feelings. And what I said to him is, but that's a feeling I had. And you may not have had the same feeling, but that was the feeling I had. And that seemed to, he could understand that. It wasn't that I changed facts.
Right.
My perspective was different than his.
So now that the book has been selling, I know you've gotten some, you know, feedback from your sister-in-law and your dad. So now that the book has been selling, what do readers tell you after they've read it? What is some of their feedback?
I've been really pleased. I've gotten some lovely reviews, but I also get direct messages from people who write to me through my website. And the things that they say are this really surprised me. I was not aware of how much readers picked up on grief in the book. I just thought, that's interesting. You know, I didn't think I was that unhappy or grieving, but the fact was, when I actually sat and looked at it, there's a lot of loss in that book, loss of friends, loss of the landscape I lived in, you know, besides the deaths and divorces, just a lot of things that cause people bereavement or grief. Mm-hmm. So that was interesting. And then some of them talked about, especially women my age who grew up in as military brats, mm-hmm. remember, we talk about how different it might be for young women today as an army brat or a military brat, how different it is for the wives and the families now that there's social media, if their husbands are abroad or their wives are abroad, right. You know, they can communicate. So we talk about the grief, we talk about a lot about how people, it makes, the book makes them want to talk to their parents more,
right,
about what took place. And or they miss their parents and wish they had spoken to them. So the book touches on a lot of things. I structure it, of course, with chapter heads that are about, you know, that are military terms or reflect that military life because it shaped ours so much. But the content within it is pretty universal, I think. Growing up, leaving home, marriage. There are lots of things I don't cover in the book because a memoir is only about a bit of time or a passage. And this one was really about me coming home to my father.
Right. You can overshare. You can overshare too. Yeah.
It comes too much. And this was really about how do I go from not knowing my dad that much and feeling like I'd really failed a lot of things to building a relationship with him. That's pretty funny. I mean, it doesn't mean we don't still butt heads because we do, but it's really been a wonderful experience. And I only wish my mom was here to see it, you know, so, but it's really been a great experience. And to share the book, share writing the book with him has been a good experience too.
So was your dad career military?
Yes, he was. He went in he enlisted, and he was a private when he and my mom eloped, and he worked his way up and retired as a full colonel in the Army. And after he retired from the regular Army, he went to work as the chief of operations for the Delaware National Guard.
Mm.
About 5 years. So he had over 35 years in the military, living a military life.
Your whole childhood was a brat.
Absolutely. I was born at St. Albans Naval Hospital in the Bronx, or Queens, one or the other. I'm not quite sure.
Wow. All right. Hey, so when you were growing up, did you like to write?
I did. And it started with letters. Like I think for a lot of us, that's how we communicated. So I started writing letters. And let me tell you, some of those letters, I'm embarrassed now. They were like fictionalized. My life was fictionalized. I had ponies. I lived on a ranch. I lived in a castle in Germany. I mean, and my mother found one once and she went, "You didn't write to your teacher and tell her you had a pony, did you?" And I went, "Oh no." But I did. And I did write. I loved the assignments that we got in school to write. My mother was often called in to discuss my writing because I was once, the assignment was to write something historical from the perspective of an inanimate object. I was in fourth grade. So I wrote about Napoleon's bidet because let me tell you, I had no idea what a bidet was, but my mother had bought this little piece of furniture in Germany that she used as a planter. And it was the center of conversation whenever anybody came to visit. My mother had ivy growing out of it. And she would say, "It's a bidet. Can you believe it?" And the people would laugh and say, "No." And so I said to her, "What is a bidet?" And she said, "Oh, this one's a portable sink where people can wash their faces." That's what she told me. So I imagine that Napoleon had to have one of these. And every day they'd put it into a wagon and carry it to his tent out in the field. I don't know what but she got called in for that.
I can imagine. So I'm going to skip a question. We'll try to come back to it. But so what lessons did your poor mother teach you then? I'm just curious now, because, you know, we learn from our parents. And so you're dealing with your active imagination. And so what lessons did you learn from your mother, and what lessons did you learn from your dad?
I learned from my mother. Well, let me start with my dad first. Just one of the biggest lessons I learned from my dad was that when we were in other countries, that it was not our country. Because we grew up at a time when, you know, America was the best thing in the world. And, you know, there was a lot of, we were great, you know, and we were going to save the world from communism and all kinds of things. And Dad always said, when you are in another country, we are respectful of that culture. We learn about, we're a visitor in their country. And so I always went into those countries and into new states and into new schools, and always as I'm visiting here, what do I need to know to be respectful and get along here? So that I learned from my dad. I also learned, although I wasn't real good at it, discipline. And so if you're going to do a job, do it the right way. So, you know, all of those kinds of things. I learned baseball from my dad. I learned everything else from my mother. I learned how to behave. I learned, I think, my moral code from her. Because she was the one that was there every day. And I learned from watching her how to engage with people. She was far more extroverted than I. And manners, to understand the landscape you were in and to enjoy it, to find the things, that there was always something that you could discover. About people, about where you lived, about history. She was just an extremely engaging person in terms of being out there in the world. And so I'm probably 25% of what she was in that regard, but it's held me in good stead. So she's, and curiosity. I think the thing was that curiosity is a good thing. It can be dangerous, but overall, you should be curious if you know in advance. So,
well, so I've been reading a fascinating book about the routines of famous creative people, and a lot of them had some hardcore vices, and most of them put their craft first and foremost. Over everything else. And so I'm switching gears here with this question. I'm not going to ask you to tell us all your vices, although that might be interesting. But do you have a writing routine or process that you do, this discipline that your father tried to instill on you? What is your writing process?
And there are lots of writers like me. My writing, a lot of it is done in my head. And it's the ideas kind of land there. They develop, and I think about them while I'm doing my chores. Or the one thing I do every morning, I write at some point. I'm not somebody who gets up, gets a cup of coffee, and sits down and writes, because I can't. I have things to do with my dad, and as the care I provide, or the assistance I provide, because he's pretty self-sufficient, but he still needs help. That has to be done first. I try by 9 o'clock to kind of sit down and get thoughts down on paper. And that might just be emptying my head so I can think clearly, or it might be, gee, I had this idea yesterday while I was weeding the flower bed. Or vacuuming or mopping a floor. And so a lot of it is in my head. And then suddenly it's as though I've collected enough virtual index cards of notes,
mm-hmm.
and it has to come out, or I can't, it's like I can't move on to something else. Mm-hmm. And I have to sit, and I'll say to Dad, I've got to write today. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll be writing for the next few days. And so that's when I will sit, and everything comes out into a draft mm-hmm. that is just a mess, full of stuff that could be five different essays rather than one. And then it starts from there. You know, you start to weed and take things out and mm-hmm. put things in. And it's crazy. It's not an orderly thing, but I have so many writer friends, and we all have different processes that work for us. And there are thankfully enough people who do what I do that I don't feel as though I'm too off the track. But that's how I do it. It's just all up in there, and to the point
to come out somehow.
Until finally, it just has to, everything. It's like clean the closet, get it out of there, and so I do.
Well, that's cool. Do you have a small snippet from your book that you could read to our listeners so they can get a feel for it?
I tried to pick something that's not too long,
right?
But it I really like this part, and you're not supposed to, if you like it, they say maybe you should get rid of it, but it fit into the book. And so
it's your book, you can put in whatever you like.
Right. But I remember I talked a lot about in the book, not a lot, but I talked about moving a lot. And I didn't, one passage that I wrote was in the chapter called Maneuvers.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was funny because I was writing about moving and going across country and everything. And then all of a sudden I wrote this part, and I realized as I chose it last night, it's because it's about home, or the things that made me feel at home and made me feel comfortable. And it's in the chapter where I talk about our having moved for the first time as a family, because for the first 3 years of my life, my dad was in he had already been through basic training, but he went to leadership school, and then he went to officer candidate school, and then he went to Korea. And so my mom and I lived alone until my brother was born, and then dad came home, and we moved together as a family after seeing him and getting adjusted for like a week or two, across country to Fort Sill, Oklahoma. And so when that was over, we went to Fort Benning before heading off to Germany. So that's when this little section, that's the part of my life this section is describing.
Mm.
After nearly 2 years at Fort Sill, Dad was transferred to Fort Benning for a short assignment before we headed to Germany. That is when military posts began to feel like home to me. Though they were not all exactly alike, you could expect some things. A post exchange, commissary, dispensary, or hospital, NCO and officers clubs, barracks, motor pools, chapels, and parade fields. No matter how different the last town or city we lived near was from the one we moved to, driving onto the post felt like coming home. Everything was familiar, from the military vehicles to the color of the buildings to the sounds. We could expect to hear reveille in the morning when the flag was raised, retreat in the afternoon when the flag came down, and taps at night, the lights out. I loved that time of day when the trumpet would sound retreat, and no matter where you were, playing ball on a playground, swinging on a swing, coming out of a building, everyone stopped as the flag came down, even if you couldn't see it. But even now, my favorite sound on any post is the sound of a platoon of soldiers marching or jogging in formation while someone calls cadence, whether it's the thump, thump, thump of their combat boots or the call and response of the cadence, I'm not sure, but it's steady and familiar. I used to think my strut song should be a cadence call. I seldom knew the words of the cadence being called, but I knew the chorus. Sound off, 1, 2. Sound off, 3, 4. Sound off, 1, 2, 3, 4. Whatever my emotion at the time, anxiety, fear, loneliness, my heart would fall into rhythm with the sound of boots hitting the asphalt, and I'd steady out. I was home.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, we've gotten some essays from brats over the years where they talk about that exact same thing. Mm-hmm. Uniformity, the home feeling. And you saw my head bobbing back and forth. One, two, three, four.
So some of those cadences could be pretty raunchy. My mother is like, "How's it go over my ear?"
Yeah, some of them were not for small ears. So you mentioned home.
Yeah.
And you know, I do ask most of our brats who come on the program to tell where home is. So as a kid, where did you consider home? Was it just a universal installation?
Where
do you consider home now, and what makes it home?
Okay. Well, I have a chapter in the book called Permanent Address, because mm-hmm. you know that the permanent address was always where are you from? In other words, if something happens to you,
they send you there.
They send you there, you know, or someone there will know where you are or where you might be. So our permanent address was always 1529 East 12th Street in Brooklyn. And that was the house my father grew up in.
Mm.
And for years, I just considered that home. I had spent a lot of my first 3 or 4 years there while Dad was away, and my mom lived there for part of the time, unhappily. But it was the one place I remembered and mm-hmm. where people knew me.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was always, and then my grandparents left that home when my grandfather retired and moved out to Long Island. And so I felt kind of at sea, you know, because where is my permanent home? We could use that address where they lived, of course, but that wasn't my home, is what I knew. So I kind of floundered and looked for a home for, I think, about 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I figured home was wherever my family was.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and because we lived in rented homes or we lived on bases or posts, it was always where our stuff was.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And there were certain things that were home, the cuckoo clocks from Germany,
mm-hmm.
The lamps, and some of the furniture from Taiwan. But mostly where my parents were, where our photos were, where my pets were, that was home to us. And I still felt that way. It wasn't the city or the town. It was always the familiar things. And I watch my brother come home to this house now
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
when he comes to visit. And he does what we all did when we came home. We walk from room to room
mm.
and we look at the pictures and we kind of ground ourselves. And, you know, this is who I am, the mm. person who had all these little fragments of our life mm. as a family. That's where home is. And it became the same for me and my girls. When they come here, they see their pictures. I have books of theirs. Toys mm-hmm. That their children now play with. So home is where your family is to me, mm-hmm. or where you can remember.
That seems to be the consensus. I just interviewed Ron Walker. He's an author, and he said home is where mom is. You know,
I've got that sign above my sink.
wow.
My daughter gave it to me for Christmas about 2 years ago, 2 or 3 years ago. And it said, home is where mom is. And I remember being so touched by that. And my dad put it, and it's okay, because I kind of like it there. He put it above the kitchen sink. So
a big hint.
That's the kitchen. That's where we all are, and I love it there.
Yeah, that's where you gather. It's the gathering place. Yeah. So in the last few minutes, is there something that I should have asked you, but I didn't, that you'd like our listeners to know about?
No, I think you had some great questions. This was fun. I think it's more something I'm interested in about readers or listeners. I'd love to see more about this. I'd love to know how similar and or different it is for younger military families now, younger brats than me. Because in the 70s, the military changed so significantly.
Right.
And I think it must be very different with the changes that they made for families, because there's certainly, we have still have somewhat of a standing army, but not to the standing military, but not to the extent that we used to. And an awful lot of the experience of military brats now are those whose dads and moms have been called up from the National Guard or the reserves. And so they're really, a lot of them leaving their home bases, if they're relocated. Or they stay while their parents are just sent out, tour after tour after tour. So that's always interested me. I'd love to hear from people on that topic, how the life has changed, and if indeed it has.
Well, go ahead.
I was going to say, I follow a lot of young military wives on Instagram and Facebook just because I'm so interested. And I just love the way they use social media, the things they're able to share with one another. And I wonder if it's easier or harder or just the same, but different. So,
yeah, well, that's an interesting, thought you've had. The museum just is wrapping up a project called E Pluribus Unum, Grace Under Pressure. And we created a survey that we sent out into the universe, and we had many people fill out the survey from different generations. And so we sort of are seeing where things were similar, where things are different. But we also, in this book, had different authors from different generations write on the same topics. So you're getting... So in our book, which hasn't been released yet, it's going to be released soon, you'll have a 20-something brat write about community, and that's bookended with a baby boomer brat writing the same essay. And it is interesting to see the different takes on words and on experiences. So that's interesting.
I'm going to have to pick it up.
Yeah. Well, it's coming out. We're in the final edits of it. It's taken years, 3 anthropologists and 2 professors and the museum and a host of writers and writers in residences and artists to do this book. But it talks about your experiences in context with gender, religion, race, identity, culture, ethnicity, and times. And so people from ages 9 to 93 weighed in on this conversation. So I wanted to just end by saying that I will put the link to your book in our podcast notes, but very quickly, where can our listeners buy the book? Amazon?
Any place, actually. As with all books, whether or not one of the major bookstores carries it in the brick and mortar store, you may not find it. I just received pictures from some folks who found it in one in Barnes and Noble and one in an independent bookstore. But you can always, get it on Amazon. You can always get it on Books or Barnes and Noble online. Or you can go into your local bookstore and request that they order it, and they'll have it. If they don't carry it, they'll have it in 2 or 3 days or a week, depending with the transportation things. I don't know. One woman told me recently she ordered it and got it in 3 days, and another bookstore owner told somebody they had ordered it and got it, took something like 2 weeks to get it. So it just depends on the distributor, and most people, I'll tell you, get it on Amazon or Barnes and Noble or bookshop.org. So it's available anywhere.
Well, it's been a real pleasure speaking with you. It's been fun.
It has been fun.
It is the final days of Military Appreciation Month, and it's almost Memorial Day and the beginning of summer. So if any of you listeners are looking for a good summer book, Tea with Dad is not light and entertaining, but it is funny in places. It is very satisfying and thought-provoking. And so I just recommend it highly. I think it'll resonate with military brats and not military brats, and definitely spouses. And you know, it resonates with a lot of people.
The brats, I really get a lot of good feedback from the brats that they enjoy it, but a lot of civilians too.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, that's what I was thinking. It's a universal theme. That's what we, you know, I think that is true. So if any of our listeners would like to be interviewed about a book they've written or a creative project they're involved in, please reach out to me. I always have to thank a few folks and say that our podcast has been brought to you by the Museum of the American Military Family and Learning Center in Tijeras, New Mexico. And our podcasts are supported in part by New Mexico Arts, the New Mexico Humanities Council, Sandia Area Credit Union, and organizations like Military Brat Seal and Military Brats Registry. And so thank you once again, Nancy, for coming on today.
Thanks for having me. It's so nice to talk to you again.
Well, thank you.
And take care.